and wrapped herself in the poncho like a robe. It had been 2 days ago, around sunset, when the vampire had scraped the back of her knee with his teeth, which meant that 48 hours had passed since then, had passed while she was asleep. That was Sunday night, and it was Tuesday night now, which means that her body must have shaken off the infection. If her symptoms hadn't gotten worse yet, then, against all odds, she'd beaten it. She wanted to scream for joy and jump up and down. She settled for spinning around the room, not caring that she was wearing only a weird poncho, not caring about anything except that she was going to stay human. She was going to be fine. It felt almost dangerous that something so good had happened. But if she got ready fast, she could be out past the gate and on the road before dawn. The upstairs of the house had several bedrooms, most of which had been stripped of furniture. She found the bathroom at the end of the hall, and when she turned the taps on in the bathtub, water flowed. It was dark at first and stank of iron, but after she let it run a little while, it became clear. She showered under the icy spray, the water heater having probably stopped functioning years back, finding an ancient, cracked lump of soap and rubbing her skin with it until she got the blood off her knees and out from underneath her fingernails. Then, with nothing else to wear, she put her jeans back on along with her new underclothes and shirt. Back in her room, she tugged on her jacket, slipping one hand into the pocket. The envelope was still there. With trembling fingers, she opened the flap and took out a folded-up page ripped from the Dylan Thomas book. Over the poem, Aiden had written in red marker, "I'm not ready to let you leave me." Tipping up the envelope, a quarter slid out into the middle of her palm. The weight had been right, and the shape, it was just the object that was wrong. He must have written those words as she carried bodies through the streets, knowing what he'd say when she got back. Knowing the whole time that he was going to con her. Tana punched the wall, not caring that her knuckles split. She hit it again, punching it over and over until blood smeared the wallboard. Never again, she promised herself. No matter what, she was never going to let anyone get the better of her ever again. No more mistakes. Rufus looked more somber than she'd seen him when he opened the door. He blinked in surprise at the sight of her. He was wearing plain jeans and a t-shirt instead of his usual finery. His eyes were bloodshot. "Aiden and Midnight cleared out about an hour ago," he said, leaning against the doorframe. "With Winter's body." Behind him, she heard Christabel calling down sleepily, asking who was at the door. He ignored her, but a little bit of snark bled back into his voice when he spoke again, one brow raised. "I guess they don't need us anymore. Zara's dead, and it was all for nothing. But Midnight, she was wearing her best, those tattered finery, planning on presenting herself to Lucien Moreau." Tana slammed her hand into the wall again. "Damn it!" she shouted up at the sky. The stars winked down at her, as if they were laughing at how silly she'd been. "Well, I guess that's where I'm headed."
"You can't go to Lucien's dressed like that." Rufus sounded apologetic. "If you're not a vampire, the only way to get in is to dress as deliciously as possible, like a raw, quivering little pork chop, and stand around with all the other humans hoping you look good enough to get picked, unless you know somebody who can get you on the very exclusive list." Tana didn't know anyone who could get her into a fancy vampire party. But she could think of a person who might be on the list. One boy with a vampire girlfriend who must visit her sometimes, maybe even without climbing across a rooftop. Tana kept looking up as she walked through the streets, hoping to spot Jameson's white crow or some sign that he was around. The chance of her actually lucking into finding him was low, but since she didn't have any other way to contact him, she figured she'd go past the places he'd taken her, eat at the cart they'd eaten at before, and ask Valentina at Oddments and Lost Things if he'd brought any other strays past. She bought coffee at a shot of Depresso,
where crushed beans were stirred into boiling water in massive copper vats, and the proprietor stood on a stool to ladle some into a cup. For 50 cents extra, you could get a squirt of fresh goat milk from a sleepy goat chewing on a patch of clover near a stall filled with bright green bottles marked laudanum. Standing in line, she noticed that very few of the people in front of her paid in cash. Some seemed to be racking up a tab, giving their name and getting a note put down on a ledger. Others bartered tomatoes, a skinned rabbit, a bundle of weed tied with string, and even a handful of aspirin for their serving. In addition to the coffee, Tana bought a giant glass of cold mint tea and 2 squirrel meat burritos, which were surprisingly good. The queso was fresh-made, and the red sauce was spicy and delicious, coating the stringy and kind of gamey meat. She sat in the moonlight at the edge of a clearing, where a mismatched group of tables and chairs rested, and ate until she felt full and was pretty sure Jameson wasn't coming. Kids, bundled in layers of clothes, shared cigarettes back and forth, and scrounged in their pockets for stuff to trade. An old man with white hair and red eyes sat beside a chessboard, inviting anyone with a shunt in their arm to play him for the price of dinner. When she was done, she wiped her hands on her jeans and stood, telling herself that she was going to remember to eat more than one meal today. Then Tana made her way over to Oddments and Lost Things, knocking on the door and peering in through the grate. She heard the metal shift of the locks, and then Valentina was there, ushering her inside.
"Tana, right?"
she said, smiling. Today she wore a peacock blue slip dress with green flats, her hair pulled back in a high ponytail. Tana inhaled the perfumed dust of the store and looked around with fresh eyes. She hadn't realized how tired she'd been the day before, waking from being drugged and then exhausting herself with terror. Now she felt angry and wide awake and a whole lot better.
"Yeah,"
Tana said, pushing the stray hairs that had come out of her braid behind her ear.
"You wouldn't know where to find Jameson, would you?"
Valentina shook her head.
"Sometimes he just shows up out of the blue with something he found. A sack of decent coffee beans, or once, a girl's ring he thought might fit me. But it's not like he comes by a lot or anything. He has a cell phone, or at least he did. He gave me the number, but I've never called it."
"Can we try?" Tana asked. Valentina opened the worn wooden drawers of the desk, sifting through the detritus. She pulled out a cell phone, the face of it cracked and the plastic scratched. When she pressed a button, though, the screen came to life. She tapped a few more keys, and Tana heard the faint sound of ringing on the other end. Valentina brought it to her ear. After a moment, she shook her head and hung up.
"Voicemail."
Tana sighed and took the phone from her, copying the number down.
"He has that girlfriend at Lucien Moreau's, so I was hoping he could help me get into the party. But if I can't find him, at least you can help me find a really hot dress, right?"
Valentina gestured to the wall, where dozens of gowns hung, overlapping one another. Silk and chiffon, beaded and spangled.
"Absolutely. I hear Lucien likes bright colors that show up well on television. But are you sure you want to go tonight?"
Tana shook her head. "It has to be tonight. Why?"
"New vampires. A bunch of them."
Valentina went to a garment rack in the back and returned with 3 dresses on hangers. One white, one gold, and one red.
"What do you mean?"
For a moment, Tana thought of Aiden and Midnight, but surely 2 new vampires weren't enough to draw any notice. Valentina dumped the clothes over a chair and pulled a heavy laptop from behind the counter. It was covered in stickers and hooked up to a weird-looking device with strips of metal.
"You really didn't see? Oh, you probably didn't bring a laptop."
"I didn't bring much of anything," Tana said, moving around the counter to watch. Valentina's background screen came on, a picture of a bunch of friends in graduation robes. Tana looked for Valentina among them, but before she could pick her out, Valentina opened her browser.
"Here, look. This is a site that compiles the best links from all cold towns, and this is the page for ours."
She clicked through, bending over the screen,
her ponytail spiraling over one cheek. Springfield.
She clicked on a link and a screen sprang to life. It was inside a theater, but someone had taken out most of the seats and there was a party going on. People got up on stage, declaiming poems and swigging from bottles, lace dripping from the cuffs of their billowing poet shirts. Valentina hit the fast-forward button, speeding through two more performers, before a boy in black climbed onto the stage. She tapped the key to return it to normal speed, and Tana saw Gabriel grinning out at the audience, garnet eyes shining, black curls wild around his face, looking as mad as he'd been caged beneath a Paris cemetery. He took an extravagant bow, one arm flung out with a flourish. Then turning, he dragged a single chair onto the stage. The stuffing had been ripped out of it, the brocade hanging down in tatters.
I have a performance to offer you tonight. It is not a unique talent that I have, but we marvel not over the man who eats a single meal, who does one meager shot of liquor. We marvel over excess. That is what I would give you. Come, let me bite you. Have you ever wanted to be as I am, to be immortal? I will turn you, any of you, all of you, if you like. Tonight, come to me.
He threw his arms wide.
I am thirsty. Let me drink. Let me gorge.
For a long moment, he waited. The crowd had gone hushed. Then a single dark-skinned woman broke from the ranks and started toward the stairs. She walked up the steps slowly, looking back at her friends. She had on a silver and black harlequin dress and had painted one of her eyes with a black diamond. Tana could see the fear on her face as she walked slowly to the chair and sat down. Tears glittered in her eyes as she stretched out her long, elegant neck. Valentina stopped it, freezing the screen as Gabriel bent toward her.
He does it, too. Bites all of them, drinks a ton of blood and then staggers out. Leaves them alive, every one. They're saying that's the thorn of Istra.
He is, said Tana softly. Valentina looked at her, surprised.
Wasn't his job to stop the spread of infection? Stop outbreaks by killing new vampires?
Tana couldn't seem to stop staring at the frozen screen, at the greedy expression on Gabriel's face. Then she gave Valentina a lopsided grin. I guess he quit. I mean, that's like a Coney Island-style hot dog eating contest. They looked at each other for a long moment and then started giggling uncontrollably.
So, you're still going to Lucien Moreau's? Valentina asked, walking to a rack and taking down a long black gown with one hand and a golden gown with the other.
Tana nodded, walking over to pet the nap of the velvet.
If Jameson comes in, though, you better show him that video. The reason he told me about his friend being at Lucien's was that he was worried she'd get caught in the crossfire if the thorn came after Lucien. He wanted to warn her.
She remembered what she'd said to Jameson about Gabriel, that whatever he would do alone. But then why turn so many new vampires? Maybe she'd been very wrong.
I think I'll come with you, Valentina said.
To the party? Didn't you just tell me that it was dangerous? Tana tilted her head to one side, trying to puzzle out Valentina's change of heart.
I'm going to warn her, Valentina said. I saw her that once, so I can find her again. I owe Jameson.
Well, that's good news for me. Tana bent down and started unlacing her boots. It's always more fun to show up at a party with friends. Chapter 26. Post by Midnight. Subject: Sad Vampire. I thought I would be writing a different post,
I know I promised I would tell you guys what it was really like beyond the walls of Cold Town, but I'm not sure I can bear to. In all my imaginings, I never thought it would be anything like this. Now Winter is dead, and I'm a vampire. I was going to just post the video footage I took and not explain, but that's not fair to you all who have been my real, true dark family, supporting me through everything, encouraging me to go on this journey. I know that you'd want to hear about what happened, not just see it. I've posted lots of times about hating how every second I was getting older. You all saw my freakouts that my cells were dying and my hair was falling out. Every time I woke up with strands on my pillow, I was sure that a piece of hair was gone forever and I would go bald and be ugly. Sometimes I thought I could feel the decay inside me, taste the rot in my mouth before I brushed my teeth in the morning. For days before I left for Cold Town, I couldn't eat because the idea of food disgusted me, the way I could feel it heavy in my stomach. I know you feel the same way sometimes, like there's something wrong with us because we're not the magnificent monsters we were meant to be. Well, you're right. I can tell you now, from the other side, that we were right. Everything feels right now. My being bitten is on tape, and I'm going to upload that video as soon as I edit it. It was just as amazing as I had hoped it would be. The pain wasn't so bad. Your skin gets kind of numb around where the fangs go in, and there's this amazing feeling, like someone is pulling all the weakness and rot away to make room for something else. But here's the part that's hard to talk about. I did a bad thing, a really bad thing. I'm the one that killed Winter. I didn't mean to. I only meant to turn him, but things got way out of control when my new fang slid into his vein. Drinking someone's blood is nothing like having your blood taken. Drinking blood is like an explosion of rose petals. It's like honey and milk and every warm thing in the world. It's like drinking pure light. I held him to me and drank and drank and drank. It was like drowning in him, like being closer than ever, together inside my veins. But now Winter isn't here to laugh with, or help me pick out outfits, or to understand me the way no one else ever did. Maybe no one else ever will understand me like that. I'll never be anyone's twin sister. No one will recognize me as the mortal I once was. The last bits of the girl I gave up being died with him. Now, there is only midnight. I guess it wouldn't have come to this if I hadn't wanted to be a vampire, if I hadn't wanted to be a marvelous monster and beautiful like the dawn. But even though I will miss Winter every minute of every day for the rest of eternity, I know that he wanted this for me. So, in his memory, I'm going to rip out this town's throat. Oh, and you, my faithful friends and readers, deserve a warning. The videos are disturbing, but we always say that we want to see the real stuff. So here it is. Chapter 27. Verse, fame, and beauty are intense indeed. But death intenser. Death is life's high mead. John Keats. The gates of Lucien Moreau's house stood open, with bouncers choosing guests from a human crowd gathered in front of them. Tana looked around at the girls in glittering red dresses and inky gowns, their eyes shimmering with liner and shadow and fake feathery lashes, and at the boys in their tight coats. Valentina had said it would be hard to stand out, and it was. Tana had chosen a long ivory silk dress with a plunging neckline, the kind worn by starlets in old movies, with a slit on her thigh that hid the scratch but revealed a lot of the rest of her leg. Unlike most vampire partygoers, she had no fresh holes at the crooks of her elbows, where needles slipped in for venipuncture. No marks except for the old scar on her arm, and she hoped that might be unique enough to get her inside if Jameson's name didn't. Tana had piled her mass of black hair up on her head, secured with two silver combs she'd bought at the pawn shop, so that everyone could see that the only thing at her throat was Gabriel's garnet necklace, each stone shining like a single droplet of blood. She hoped she looked fresh and clean, untasted, wrapped up like a dumb little sacrifice. She'd left her boots, jacket, and backpack at the shop, and concealed the rest of her things in a vintage clutch of hammered brass, sculpted into the shape of a gilded lion's head with gluey pits for eyes where stones had once been set. Her knife she'd strapped to her thigh with two leather belts. It had taken her the better part of an hour to put together the outfit, and 15 more minutes of struggling in front of a cloudy window to get her hair up and staying that way. Then Valentina had made Tana sit in front of a mirror while she brushed her lashes with mascara, highlighted the arch of her brow with silver, and painted her lips a pale shell pink. As she walked up to the gate, the lion clutch banged against her hip from a thin chain, making her change rattle inside it, a hollow metallic sound. Valentina wore a bronze dress that shimmered with beading. It showed off the long expanse of her legs. Her lion's mane of hair hung around her shoulders, and her golden makeup was brighter than ever. Tana grinned at her as they waded through the crowd to the gate. The bouncer was a big, muscular man with long hair pulled back in a black velvet ribbon. His gaze stopped on Tana for a moment, but instead he waved in a tall girl, naked, except for a mangy mink coat. Tana edged closer as a trio of boys in leather pants slipped past. Then the bouncer chose two girls in matching green silk chongsams, their hair styled and colored in identical copper bobs, so it seemed as if they were twins. "Our friend is on the list," Tana yelled over the noise, pointing and hoping the bouncer could hear her.
"Your friend?" he repeated back dubiously. "Really? What's the name?"
"Jameson," Tana said, standing up on her toes, trying to see the clipboard.
"You got any more name than that?"
the bouncer asked. A superior smile twisted his lips. Valentina stepped forward, managing to project an impressive aura of haughty impatience.
"You know his name. Jameson Ramirez Alonso. Now, he told us to meet him here, and he told us we wouldn't have any trouble getting in. This is ridiculous."
The bouncer looked as though he wanted to hassle her a little more, but something about her crossed arms and downturned mouth warned him off it.
"Fine, go on."
Relief washed over Tana, and then, before she could quite believe it, they were walking past the scrollwork gate with knife-sharp posts and into Lucien Moreau's party.
"Nice job," she said under her breath.
Valentina smiled, chin high.
"Good plan. We're like a pair of hot girl spies."
The house was a massive Victorian with a wraparound porch. The building loomed tall and strange, with several roofs of slate and glass. Partygoers stood on the sloped lawn beyond the gates, a few lying in the patchy grass or laughing as they ran in teasing circles. A thick, cloying incense perfumed the air, and the closer she got to the massive door, which stood open atop the steps, the stronger the smell grew. Myrrh and musk, covering up some sweet, foul stench underneath. She walked up the steps and through the open door into the foyer. There was music playing somewhere, the thin, tortured sound of violins, accompanied by discordant, distant human cries. Her heart started to speed and her breath came unsteadily. She had the immediate sense that this party wasn't for humans, no matter how many were present or who watched the recordings from their homes. Cameras looked down from the corners of the ceilings, blinking with green lights to show they were on. On the local cable channel back home, from 3 until 4:30 in the morning, there was a show in which a girl called Asphodel, wearing a long purple wig, would broadcast clips of the party she thought were worth highlighting and discuss them with callers. Black bars covered any actual penetration of fangs, so as not to offend the FCC. A red-eyed girl in a silver dress passed Tana, spattered with blood, jolting her out of any pretense that this was anything but a dangerous fishbowl of monsters, a snake cage full of mice. A thin, mad giggle threatened to burst from Tana's lips, but she clenched her fingers hard enough for her nails to dig into her palms and waited for the feeling to pass.
"You okay?"
Valentina asked. She was looking up the stairs at people there, holding mismatched champagne coupes in their hands. A vampire in a tuxedo looked down from the landing, his pale hands gripping the wood railing. He smiled like a ferryman come to conduct her to the realm of the dead. Tana nodded. "Calm down," she told herself. "Just find Aiden, get the marker back, and get out." When she left Cold Town, she decided she and Pauline would go on a road trip. She wouldn't go straight home, not with her thoughts full of blood and teeth and ruby eyes. They'd go on an adventure instead, a normal one, where nothing very adventurous happened. They could head south until the money ran out. She imagined driving through the day with the windows down, slushies melting in the cup holders, the radio turned up, and Pauline singing along in the passenger seat. Tana forced herself to move, to walk into the first of a honeycomb of high-ceilinged rooms. It was purple-walled, with a boy spread out on a table that was covered in a white cloth. A few vampires gathered around, licking the thin lines of blood welling up from shallow slices on his arms and legs, his skin already glossy with spit. His eyes were closed, but sometimes they fluttered a little, as if in dreams. "Do you see her anywhere?" Tana whispered. Valentina shook her head. She was trying to seem blasé, but she couldn't quite tear her gaze from the boy and the blood. Taking her arm, Tana steered her through to a second room. There, human girls and boys, painted with latex, metal gags covering their mouths, had been manacled directly to the walls, which were covered in a pattern of steel plates to look like picture frame molding. Tana watched in astonishment as a man walked up to one, grabbed the girl's wrist, and sank his teeth directly into her skin.
"They're infected,"
said a vampire in a long dress of deep red satin, corseted over her stomach and sewn with pieces of jet. It showed off a long, jagged half-moon of a scar at her shoulder. Her coffee-brown hair was pulled back into a tight, sleek chignon, and her lips were painted the same scarlet as her eyes.
"It doesn't matter if you bite them. They can't get any more infected, can they?"
Tana smothered a gasp at the sight of the woman. She was famous. Tana knew her instantly from watching clips from Cold Town and from dozens of Tumblr gifs showing her sternest expression, captioned with, "OMGWTF," or, "I'm freaking dead serious," or, "Nom nom nom." She was Elizabeth, Lucian's lover, rumored to be far more callous and cruel than he was. She appeared young, barely older than Tana, but her eyes were ancient and cold as lead, and there was something else about her face.
"They'll never get any less infected either,"
Valentina said under her breath.
"You ran away with my prize."
Elizabeth pressed a cool finger over Tana's chin, making her flinch.
"Oh?"
Tana said, dread shivering up her spine. She realized with a lurch of nausea that she'd seen Elizabeth before, in Lance's house, her face so bloated from feeding that until this moment, Tana hadn't realized who she was. She thought of the gore-streaked walls, and there was a ringing in her ears, shock drowning out all other sound.
"Where is he?"
Elizabeth whispered against her ear, impatient, as though maybe she was repeating herself. Tana had no idea what to say to that. Fear made her stupid.
"I don't know what you're talking about,"
Tana forced out, not bothering to disguise her terror.
"My mistake,"
Elizabeth said, lips cool against Tana's skin.
"Enjoy the party, sweet girl."
And with that, the vampire spun away. Still shaking, Tana closed her eyes and let the noise of the party wash over her. The music and the conversation and the moans. Let all her thoughts go, hoping that the fear would go with them.
"What the hell just happened?" Valentina asked.
"Please tell me she isn't Jameson's girlfriend," Tana said, and finally, sucking in a deep breath, opened her eyes.
"Of course not. Are you crazy?"
Valentina didn't look ready to calm down.
"I thought Elizabeth was going to kill you and eat you right in front of me. Let's go."
Tana shook her head vehemently, but she thought of sharks that bumped against their victim several times before they bit down. Maybe Valentina would be smart to get far away from her if Elizabeth was just circling. "We both need to find a different person. How about we split up, take a quick sweep, and meet by the stairs? We'll take 10 minutes, tops. And if one of us doesn't show, the other goes back to your shop and waits."
"And if one of us never shows?"
Valentina asked, looking at Tana as if she knew exactly what she'd been thinking. "Then I guess the other one can feel pretty lucky," Tana said with a half-hearted shrug.
"Be careful," said Valentina.
"You too." Tana took a deep breath and kept moving through the rooms, only looking back once. She wanted to turn around and tell Valentina that she'd changed her mind. She didn't want to be alone, but it was safer this way. "Find Aiden," she told herself. "Then go, go, go." She came to a huge ballroom next, with a ceiling of windows like a massive gazebo, all tinted black. The panes glittered and flashed like prisms with the reflected light of 3 brass chandeliers, each arm in the shape of a dragon. During the day, the ceiling must flood the room with strange gray light. Tana still hadn't seen Aiden or Midnight, but the crowd was bigger here, so she carefully picked her way through, looking for them. From behind her, she heard a rasping voice, as brittle as dried leaves.
"He's here," it said.
She froze. Transported to Lance's party, hearing the echo of the vampires on the other side of the door. She was sure it was one of them speaking. The others were here too, not just Elizabeth. Maybe the one that had scraped her. She had to lean against one of the walls for a long moment, trying not to hyperventilate. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw the vampire who'd spoken. He had white hair and long, jagged fingernails. The other one appeared younger. He was brown-haired, with a pointed chin and freckles that stood out against the pallor of his skin. Both were matching black suits with mandarin collars. A visceral, full-body shudder passed through her. She reminded herself that she wasn't the one they were looking for. They were hunting Gavriel. To bring the Thorn of Istra back to the spider and to his prison. To pay for letting Casper Morales go. To make sure Gavriel stayed there, mad as ever. As though the world hadn't changed and the ancient vampires were still in charge. Even if nowadays they ruled over what they barely understood. And if Elizabeth had been with them, then maybe Lucian was helping the spider, sending out his own people to make sure Gavriel wound up right back in a cell.
"He's here," they'd said.
And it was Gavriel they were looking for. So did that mean he was at the party? She craned her neck, trying to spot him in the crowd. What she saw instead was Lucian Moreau walking into the room, unmistakable and oddly magnetic. People turned toward him automatically, as flowers aligned themselves toward the sun. Elizabeth was on his arm, looking as remote as she did on the Cold Town feeds. If her beauty was dark, Lucian's was bright. He was all careless elegance, with tousled blonde hair that shone like gold and an ivory suit with the top 2 buttons of his white shirt undone. The bones of his face were arranged in a way that was both handsome and austere. He had an aquiline nose, finely drawn lips, and a certain gauntness to his cheeks that spoke of greater age or infirmity than the rest of him showed. Looking past Lucian and Elizabeth, Tana finally saw Aiden. He was underdressed, slouching against a wall in a black silk shirt over black jeans. Tana wondered if Midnight had picked out those clothes for him, and then wondered if they had been borrowed from Rufus. Steeling herself, she walked over to him, giving a wide berth to any other vampire she saw.
Tana!
Aiden said, looking incredibly pleased to see her right up to the moment when she punched him in the face. He staggered back, and several people glanced over, tittering. Elizabeth was looking her way again, which unnerved her, but not enough that she regretted hitting Aiden. She didn't regret it one bit.
Ow! He said. I think one of my fangs knocked into my cheek. That really hurt.
She put her hands on her hips and just stared at him. She knew that he was stronger than her and about a million times more deadly, but he was still Aiden, and he still hated it when someone was mad at him. He rubbed his chin where her fist had struck.
Come on, Tana. I wasn't going to keep it. I just wanted you to stay a little longer. You know how I hate going places alone.
You are such a jerk, Tana said. Seriously, a huge, unbelievable jerk.
I know,
he said, looking both repentant and impish at once.
But you got all dressed up and came to a party, so don't you want to have a good time? I mean, you're already here.
You've got Midnight to party with. Tana stuck out her hand, palm up. Hand it over. Now.
Well, what if we hang out for a while first? I've got stuff to tell you that you're going to want to hear.
Please? Her anger was draining away, turning to fear. He could keep her in cold down forever. She couldn't make him give back the marker. She couldn't make him do anything. He sighed, watching her expression change, then reached into his back pocket and, keeping his hand cupped over it, put the marker into her hand.
You better be careful not to let anyone see it.
She let out a breath, surprised and indescribably relieved. Despite his red eyes, despite everything, she supposed he was still Aiden, still her ex-boyfriend, still her friend, still a person. The same boy she'd met in art class, the same boy with the floppy hair who was always in love and always sincere, even when he was joking. She shoved the disc into her lion's head purse, but not before sneaking a look to make sure it was really the marker.
Thank you. The only reason I took it is because I wanted a chance to talk to you again, when things were less awful, to get you to forgive me for everything I've done.
She didn't bother pointing out that making her even matter in the service of getting forgiveness didn't make a lot of sense.
It didn't matter now.
It wasn't your fault. Well, some of it wasn't your fault. He smiled.
Did you know Gabriel's at this party?
That's what I was going to tell you.
I saw him before, but I don't think he saw me.
Tana turned her head without really meaning to, but all the faces belonged to strangers. She saw the terrifying vampires in the black suits talking to Lucien and Elizabeth. And despite her stupid, hopeless desire to see Gabriel one more time, she hoped that Aiden was wrong. Those vampires were hunting for him. She remembered their whispered voices through the door. She remembered the sting of their teeth against the back of her leg and the dead, staring eyes of her classmates. No matter what Gabriel was capable of, she didn't want him to have to face them. Aiden nodded.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say hi and all, but when I got closer, he was gone. I didn't see where he went.
Tana did not want to consider what Aiden might have said to Gabriel about her.
We should go, she told him.
Is Midnight with you? Because I think this party is going to get very unsafe in a minute.
She's here looking for a new place for us to squat. She wants to find us a family of vampires. Nestmates or some crap like that, she calls them.
What about Rufus and Christabel? Tana asked. He shook his head.
What about them? She's going to keep killing humans. She says that when their hearts stop, their souls drag you halfway to eternity as they die, and for a moment you're like some dark god staring down at the world. She scares the hell out of me, Tana. I don't want her to be the only friend I have here.
She didn't know what to say to that. It wasn't fair that Aiden had become a vampire. He wasn't like Lucien Moreau, or the kids who came here hoping to be turned. He shouldn't have had to fight his impulses. No one at the farmhouse should have had to die. Whole pieces of cities shouldn't be walled off like prisons ruled by their inmates. Children shouldn't have to grow up trapped inside, with no way out. None of it was fair. But she couldn't think of a way to fix any of it. And the helplessness was worse than anything else. "Aiden, you've got to..." Tana started to say. From one end of the room, from behind Elizabeth and Lucian, a silvery knife came flying through the air. The crowd parted, gasping in a single voice. The freckled vampire from the farmhouse shrieked. The curved dagger stuck deep in his chest. He clawed at it, then began to shrink into himself, like a balloon with all the air rushing out, his skin turning desiccated, dark, and papery. His white-haired companion stretched a long-fingered hand as if he could possibly help, as if it wasn't already too late. The suited vampire was curling up, fingers clenched into dried-out claws. He fell to the floor, pieces of him cracking off as if he were made from the fibers of a hornet's nest, a liquid spilling out that looked more like amber than blood. Every head was turned to watch the spectacle, including Tana's. She'd never seen anything like this, not on YouTube or in documentaries or in Suicide Square. She'd never seen an ancient vampire withering away to his mortal remains before her eyes. They were careful and clever, and almost never died, certainly not like this. She was so stunned that she almost didn't catch the whisper-soft sound of an impossibly fleet footstep. She was able to register Gabriel just before he reached the white-haired vampire. Gabriel had two more knives, one glittering in each hand, short, cruel, curved blades. He threw his arms around the vampire from behind, pulling him close in what looked like an embrace, before he jerked his arms to the sides, uncrossing the blades and scissoring off the vampire's head. Blood gouted, dark and thick as syrup, before he began to wither too. Lucian's white suit was splattered. The bystanders' faces and elaborate clothing were dotted with blood, as if it rained down from the sky like a summer storm in a nightmare. Tana felt it on her cheeks, wet and still warm, as though he'd just fed. The white-haired vampire's face remained frozen in shock or grief, his last expression preserved as his head spun from his shoulders. It hit Lucian's shining marble floor and rolled into the crowd. Gabriel spun on Lucian and Elizabeth. It was only then that Tana realized Lucian had moved, seizing up the dagger from the body of the first fallen vampire. Elizabeth made a small sound of surprise.
"Good entrance, right?"
Gabriel asked, and then looked at Elizabeth.
"And what a delight to see you here with him."
He was as beautiful as he'd ever been, features sharpened by anger. But it was impossible to look at him, spattered with gore, and believe that once his mouth had been on hers. He seemed like something out of a dark hallucination now, something terrible and unknowable, a trickster god of murder.
"We wondered how long it would take you to arrive," said Lucian, holding the dagger as though it were merely something to gesture with. "You took a circuitous path."
Gabriel shrugged.
"It was my own time to take."
"That little feast of yours last night was quite something," said Lucian. "Do you know what kind of chaos you've unleashed, infecting all those people?"
The corner of Gabriel's lip rose. His eyes shone with mad delight.
"No idea, but I look forward to finding out."
At that, Lucian laughed. It might have been an honest reaction.
"You've changed."
Gabriel acknowledged the words with a small bow of his head.
"In a decade? How could I not have? And what a decade it's been."
Lucian flinched.
"You're angry that we betrayed you, and you have every right. That was my fault and my failing. I have regretted it often."
He swept his hand through the air.
But look at the world you made. How beautiful and vibrant it is. We were wrong to cling to the shadows and creep through the night. Your mistake has set us all free. Now, at last, you can see what the old vampires feared. You left me to rot away in chains, Gavriel said. Gavriel and Lucian locked eyes. Gavriel went on in a soft voice. And you tried to recapture me for the spider. Do you deny it?
My people were afraid.
Elizabeth worried he'd broken you and sent you to hunt us down. The ancient vampires hate any of us who adapted. They hate me most of all, broadcasting secrets. We tried to capture you, but not for the reasons you think.
You shouldn't worry over me, said Gavriel. Not anymore.
All the pieces were sewn back together in nearly the right places.
What can we give you, Gavriel? Elizabeth asked. What can we do to show you how sorry we are? Whatever it is, we know that you're owed it.
Gavriel licked the blood off his knife, his tongue sweeping to the tip of the blade. I want to watch both your ashes blow away across the face of a blood-red moon. He sang the next bit, his voice swelling with madness.
By the light, by the light, by the light of the blood-red moon, I'll be killing you soon.
Do you remember that song? I've altered the words a little. So nothing will satisfy you but death? Asked Lucian, clearly uncertain at how to talk to this new Gavriel.
I came a long way for it. I'd hate to go back empty-handed.
He sounded truly crazy, Tana thought. Crazy like some poet or prophet. Crazy and lethal. He shrugged his shoulders and grinned.
Let us show you how grievously sorry we are, Lucian said,
with the voice that had enchanted so many children hungry for the grave. The voice that mesmerized viewers the world over. He put his hand on Elizabeth's shoulder, pressing down lightly.
Let us make a formal apology. We'll kneel and beg your forgiveness. Could you think of any other creature we would kneel before?
Elizabeth glanced over her shoulder at him, as if looking to read on his face whatever he planned, but then, slowly, sank to her knees, her skirt puddling around her. She looked like a beautiful supplicant at a shrine. Even Gavriel seemed transfixed, staring down at her. His brows drew together, and his chin lifted as though he was trying to wrench himself free of her hold on him. Lucian moved behind her, stroking her dark hair back from her face.
She took my men and went after you. They wanted to protect me. Isn't that sweet? But I swear to you, I had nothing to do with it.
Elizabeth looked up and struggled to rise, but Lucian seized a handful of her hair and jerked her head back. Then, with Gavriel's own knife, Lucian sliced her throat open. The river of her veins parted, blood pouring out like water. He cut farther, severing her head. The whole room gasped as Elizabeth's body slumped forward, Tana gasping with them. Lucian wore a tiny, odd smile as her body began to curl and wizen, her honey-colored skin wrinkling like bark. Her lush mouth withered, and the hollows where her eyes had been grew as sunken as the gluey holes of Tana's purse. Lucian let her head fall. A moment before, Elizabeth had been one of the most dangerous people in the ballroom. Now she was dead. A few partygoers knelt down beside her, as if there was something yet to do for her, as though she'd just fainted. A woman with a pierced nose and mermaid braids stroked the vampire's once smooth cheek. A boy drew his finger through Elizabeth's blood and popped that finger into his mouth.
You're worth more to me than she could ever be, Gavriel, Lucian said, stepping away from her body. Now that I've punished her for you, perhaps you will see how much I mean that. I loved Elizabeth in my way, but you are as a son to me. Forgive a father his sins. Gabriel took a step back, the shock on his face evident. Did she really deserve that? You asked for our deaths, Lucian said. I gave you hers. Ask me for something else, and I will give you that, too. I knew from the moment you broke out of the cage under the Père Lachaise Cemetery that you would come here, either as my prisoner or of your own free will. Abruptly, Lucian raised his voice. Cut the feeds from this room! Cut them! One by one, the lights on the cameras around the room went from green to red. The crowd that had gathered began murmuring. Tana wondered what it meant that Lucian had left the streaming video on while he murdered Elizabeth, and only now was calling for it to be turned off. What could be worse than that? She edged toward the door, pushing through the crowd. Gabriel looked incandescent, trembling with readiness. We never would have hurt you, Lucian said. We knew that once we'd captured you, we could begin to plan. Plan a glorious future and a far better revenge than you dreamed, my dear lost friend. The old ways are dead, and it's time the old ones died with them. Starting with you, Gabriel said, but his gaze kept tracking from Lucian to Elizabeth, as though he was still surprised by her corpse. You don't really want to kill me, Lucian said. Look at you. You're even sorry Elizabeth is gone. You just want to come home. Do I? Gabriel asked. You know why in films the villain hesitates before he kills the hero? You know why he explains his whole dastardly plan? Do you know why you're hesitating now? Gabriel quirked a smile. I do know, but I wager you'll never guess. Lucian plunged on. Because the villain knows that without the hero to hate, his life would be empty. Once he's murdered his adversary, he's alone. So you're the hero? Gabriel asked. Every hero is the villain of his own story, wouldn't you say? Lucian was speaking to Gabriel, but he pitched his voice to carry to the crowd of partygoers. He knew how to draw them to him and make them hang on his every word. I wouldn't. Gabriel looked amused, though, as if this rhetorical style was familiar to him, as if it charmed him, not the show itself, but the memory of Lucian acting this way. Isn't every hero aware of all the terrible reasons they did those good deeds? Aware of every mistake they ever made and how good people got hurt because of their decisions. Don't they recall the moments they weren't heroic at all? The moments where their heroism led to more deaths than deliberate villainy ever could. Gabriel was staring at Lucian as though fascinated, as though finally one of Lucian's attempts to capture his attention had worked. You've been alone for 10 years. And maybe longer than that, but you won't be alone anymore. I know you. I know you better than anyone in the world, and if you forgive me, I will serve up vengeance enough to sate even you. Together, we'll kill the spider. Gabriel's knife hand sagged. He was going to do it, Tana realized. He was going to let a man who just murdered his girlfriend talk him into making an alliance, with her corpse still on the floor between them. She turned away, disgusted, through a door to the outside. On the lawn, she felt dizzy from the mingled scents of incense and blood, and her head started to throb. She leaned her hand against the wall near a collection of trash cans and garden tools, waiting to see if she was going to vomit. Then she'd walk to the front and see if Valentina was still there. Tana? A girl's voice asked. Tana looked up to see Midnight coming toward her from the front yard in a shiny vinyl dress.
Her blue hair hung around her shoulders, and she looked as sweet and calm as if the last 2 days had never happened.
Is that you?
Yeah, Tana said, taking another shuddering breath. I'm okay. Just give me a minute.
I'd hope you'd come to the party,
Midnight said, stepping closer. The scent of decay wafted off her.
I wanted to thank you for everything you did the other night.
Tana was about to tell her that she was welcome when Midnight grabbed for her throat. Chapter 28. How shocking must thy summons be, O Death? Robert Blair. Vienna in 1912 was very different from Paris a mere 20 years before. The streets were full of motor cars and bicycles during the day, and at night, the whole city glowed with electric lights. Phones rang, and elevators whisked the bourgeoisie up the floors of the rent palaces along the Ringstrasse, where the walls of the old city had once been. Sigmund Freud had published Drei Abendungen zur Sexualtheorie already, and Carl Jung was just about to publish Wandenlügen und Symbole der Libido. The modern age was well underway, and everyone believed themselves to be marching forward to a better tomorrow. But prostitutes still prowled the ground where gallows had once hung, willing to lie down on top of tombs with a man for the price of a newspaper. Other things prowled there, too. Vienna was a city with its lights on, and no one wanted to acknowledge what happened in the dark. Lucien Moreau strode through the night streets in his buttoned-up black sack coat, Elizabeth beside him, in a beaded, high-necked lace dress, all cream and gold and black. Gabriel was on the other side, in a charcoal coat that nearly matched Lucian's own. They were gorgeous creatures, wholly fascinating, and unequivocally broken, Lucian mused as they walked. They were also likely to be executed before the night was out, all because of him. A vampire was supposed to seek permission before creating progeny, and Lucian hadn't. He would never have received it, not for either of his offspring, unstable as they were. Gabriel was half in love with death. He'd lost a lover to it and put his own brother in a grave, so maybe it was no surprise that he stalked murderers through the city's streets, sinking his fangs into their jugulars and gulping down their blood. Every night, it was as though he avenged his brother by killing some stand-in for himself. And one only had to look to see the madness that glittered behind Elizabeth's eyes. Lucien had discovered her in Portugal, on trial for the murder of her husband. He'd been impressed with the way she spat on the ground and declared that not only had she done it, but if the Lord raised her husband back up in that very courtroom, she'd do it again. Lucien and Gabriel broke her out of prison that night. She'd gone with them without a single look back. When she hunted, she used a razor instead of her teeth and attacked her victims with a ferocity that would have been unnerving in a man twice her size. And now he would have to mourn them. He tried to say amusing things as they walked through the streets, tried to pretend that it was possible for the spider, ancient and terrible as he was, to let them live. But Lucian knew his progeny would, in all likelihood, be destroyed. Ancient vampires ruled over their portion of the world like feudal lords, favoring the same sorts of punishments. Perhaps Lucian should have told them to run, but he knew that neither Istanbul nor Shanghai nor any other place was far enough to hide from a creature like the spider, who could pull at his Baroque web of connections to cause the fall of the banks in Luxembourg or a revolution in Spain. If they ran, he would track them across the world. Besides, if they ran, it would get Lucien in a lot of trouble. Elizabeth flashed him a fierce look.
We should kill the spider, she said. Kill him and drain him. His blood would grant us all his centuries of power. Even shared, we'd be able to make the rules instead of listening to them.
Don't be stupid, Lucien snapped. Although in truth, he had heard that there was a spider before this one, killed in the way Elizabeth proposed. If you make a single move against him, we'll all be dead. It's important that you show him that I've taught you the proper respect for your elders. Then perhaps you should have, said Gabriel in his soft, self-possessed voice. Lucian shot him a sharp look.